Welcome, fam. This is MD Fem. We are a group of female physicians from diverse backgrounds who have decided to share our stories with you, our listening audience. We are real, we are honest, and we are candid about topics that affect all of us. We hope that our dialogue will dispel myths, change culture, and rewrite the narrative. Please visit us on Instagram, Facebook, and our website, mdfem.com. If you have questions or a topic you would like us to address, please don't hesitate to reach out to us through our social media, website, or our email. We listen, we care. MD Fem. Okay, so we're here for another episode of MD Fem. I'm Dr. Kristen Scatliff. I'm here with Dr. Wall, Dr. Ampadu, and Dr. McKenzie. Say hi, guys.
Ah.
And we are going to be talking about gender equality and equity. And so let's start off with something I saw on a TED Talk, and they were talking about a gendered society. And one of the talkers was saying the problem with gender in the workplace is that we ignore the gender differences instead of facing them head on. And have you noticed any gender differences at your place of work? Something that you would want to change or something that's affected you directly? And you don't have to be specific, you know, because we still work in these places. So
for me, I can think about one of the places I used to work at. There was a clear distinction because it was a large group. However, all the men were the breadwinners in their family and all their wives were stay-at-homes, not in a stay-at-home wife. And then all the women clearly were working. And so they expected, it was a place where we did RVU. So if you saw more patients, you made more of a bonus. And they split the census. So they expected the women to work as hard as the men. The men were always cranking up, asking for more patients, asking for more. Why? Because it meant more money for them. Right. And then the women were like, we cannot see this many patients because one, it eats into our day. Most of us have to go home to help the kids with homework, cook food. The husband has not done anything, do laundry. So there was a huge difference. And to be honest with you, all the women ended up quitting that job, including myself.
Okay, so wait a second. There was no cap? Like, I mean, I don't understand. So as much as you can see, and then that's, wow.
That was it. And because it was, it was like a round robin. You get the census in the morning, then you split the men wanted a large census.
Right, because they see more, they get paid more.
Exactly. But right. The women were like, no, contain it at like, you know, 100. Make our hard cap for the ED 100. Then they can give it to the other groups. The men were like, no, give us 130, give us 140. And it's like, we can't see that many patients.
Wow. The queer is that place where I did a few shifts?
Sure is.
I was like, I said no.
You said no. So
I did four shifts and I said,
I mean, the men could do it. And in different large conversation, the men could do it because they would go home, everything's prepared for them. Dinner's done, laundry's done, kids are bathed. You know, everything was up because their wives stayed at home. The women, there was no way they could do that because at home, they started their second job.
So see, that stems into something that they also discussed in this conversation about gender, which was there's a difference between when men pitch in or help out as opposed to sharing the load. There's a complete difference in that definition. So, you know, apparently it's like, so they were breaking down the thought process of a man that helps out at home. Okay. And they were saying that the woman is still the manager. So like, let's say you're at a job, right? And you're supposed to be managing, let's say cereal. Okay. You're ordering all the cereal that comes into the supermarket, right? Frosted Flakes, Fruit Loops, who cares, whatever. Right. Are you expected to stock that cereal? Do you put price tags on that cereal? No. You order cereal and you say this is where it goes, right? But when it comes to you being a working mom or whatever at home, you're not only organizing what's coming in and being a manager on that level, but you're also expected to come in at the back end and still stock the shelves, if you catch what I'm saying, right? And then when he does it, oh, I've helped out. He had did nothing with the organization process, right? But he put two boxes on the shelf. That's the disequity that's going on. So I understand what you're saying in terms of, you know, the working mom, it doesn't, she can't pick up 100 patients like the other guy, because she still has to go home and take care of the kids and laundry and this kind of, so it kind of stems back to the family unit. And how do you get your partner to be a more active participant in, you know, the family life, so that you as a working woman can do what you need to do? That would be deferred to Dr. Wall and Dr. McKenzie, because, you know, me and you, Aquia, we on our own.
Not for long,
but, you know, I'm just going to sip some tea. Can y'all answer that question for me?
So I can talk from my perspective. I think it comes with the husband that's understanding and knows what you're doing. So you have to be open and tell him that, hey, this is what I'm doing. I mean, I'm cooking, cleaning, taking care of baby, all of that. And I mean, you as a mom can let him know that you're okay to let go of some of these responsibilities. Cause I feel like some women or mothers feel like it's their responsibility, so they hold on to these things. And probably the men don't know, to be honest with you. But as long as you have that conversation with your husband and the expectation that, hey, please don't expect me to do everything, I feel like it will break down that barrier if you, that woman have to do everything.
Okay.
That's what I've experienced.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a loaded conversation, you know, gender roles and stereotypes that we can
exactly
talk about in here. But, you know, I'm the breadwinner in my family. My husband's a stay-at-home dad. And it's tough. He is not as, you know, detail-oriented as I am, or structured or organized as I am. But he does it well. Mm-hmm. I do what I do, and I do it well.
Right.
We just have to come together and try to make sure that we're doing it well together, obviously. But it took a lot of training, essentially, on both of our parts, because I'm not in a traditional role and he's not in a traditional role, quote unquote traditional. And, you know, times have changed. We're all, it's a lot different than in the past.
Right.
And we kind of need to redefine traditional sometimes.
Exactly.
But he does well. He does well with our boys. He does well taking them places, you know, educating them, teaching them when I'm not available. And when I'm home, I do it. The only problem with that is that I try to compensate for when I'm not home. I'm working, you know, a full-time job, and I'm going home and I'm also working a full-time job because I'm trying to compensate for me not being there.
I feel like a lot of women or mothers do that.
Right.
They don't want to let go.
It goes back to the mom guilt, right? You come back and you're like, you know, okay, I've been at work all day, you know, I still want to put in as much as he put in throughout the day. And how is that possible? Because you don't have enough time in the day. There's not enough hours. When are you going to sleep? Like, when are you going to do other things? I can't imagine. So now let me ask the question, because I've heard this from a male peer and I was in shock when he said it. He's like, I don't know why women want us to step up and do all these things at home now, because he's like, I grew up in a house with a working mother and she did everything and she never complained. That's what he said. How do you address that kind of attitude? Because there are males out there with that thought process. She's breathing out. Like, what do you say?
I'll leave that to his wife.
he wouldn't work out.
I know.
You know, and in the field that we're in, you know, it's mentally draining, emotionally draining. It takes a lot from you. It doesn't, you're not just going to work and coming home.
Right.
You know, you're taking every patient that you see, you take on something from them, mm-hmm. and you take it home with you. You have to find that spouse that will say, okay, how was your day? And let you decompress before mm-hmm. you go home to be mommy or go home to be, you know, wife. I don't know who that guy is, but
we're just gonna
yeah.
Okay.
I bet you, but if his wife is a doctor, I don't know how she does it. If she isn't a doctor,
she is not.
Yeah. Maybe it's a little bit different, you know.
And that's what I said. Like, there's no way like a female physician, yeah. you couldn't know. No.
Yeah.
No. Especially one if it's one thing when you're, you know, we are different levels and different specialties. I can't imagine doing what I do in the ICU and then coming home to have to do a whole thing at yeah. home like that. Mm-hmm. We're not going to work out, bro. Let's part ways now. Thanks.
Yeah. It's tough to be 100% in all angles of
exactly.
your life.
Exactly. Something's going yeah. to give, either okay, voluntarily or not voluntarily, and you don't want it given away when you didn't, you know, you didn't plan yeah. for that. So then there's another conversation in terms of, like, gender, you know. Do we think that all, how do I say this? All women are seen the same within our profession. I'm talking about regardless of class, regardless of race, so forth, whatever. Do you think we're all on the same playing field? Or do you think there is a difference between, you know, us and our white female counterparts? Do you think people view us differently? Or do you think they all just say women doctors and we're all under the same umbrella? It's a difficult question.
I think anything, there's a bit of ageism in medicine. You know, you may have two women doctors, but if one looks very, very young compared to the older one who's gray-haired and has been around for 30 years, I think people will be more prejudiced to the younger physician compared to the older seasoned white woman or black woman, whoever it may be. So if anything, I think when you break it down to gender, there's some ageism involved.
Okay, you think there's ageism. Okay.
Yeah. There's definitely, Kristen, there's definitely, you know, we're a lot different from our white counterparts or non-black or non-brown counterparts. I have experienced it directly. I work nights. I work predominantly in the ED. I'm not an ED physician, but I do all the admissions. So I sit there with my nurse practitioner. She's white. Mm-hmm. I've had many a times where the residents, you know, male, female, all different types of residents, never met me before, you know, the first years. They come in and they walk directly to her and they're saying, oh, are you Dr. McKenzie? Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I look at them, I laugh, and I just say, no. No, she's not. Nice to meet you. You know, they don't even see you as a physician. You know, that's something that we deal with every single day. You walk in, you have to prove yourself to patients every single day. Yeah. It becomes tiring.
I kind of get the joy of that smirk on their face when you say Dr. Hallberg, like, oh. Like, really? Oh.
I personally call it the clutch pearl moment when you say doctor, they go, the clutch pearl. I love it. I do it for purpose because I I've been called a lot of things because number one, I don't wear a white coat. I think it's a fomite. Okay. And I don't wear it. It carries germs. I don't put it on. And everybody wears a white coat now. That's a whole nother topic. Okay. The social worker has it on, the pharmacist, the lab tech, the meaning of it is diluted. So I just don't wear it. But I have a big badge that says MD. I mean, look, it's huge. You would have to be almost legally blind not to see the MD on it. It's a big MD. And still, oh, are you the lab tech? Or did you come to draw the blood? Or can you give me a bedpan? Oh, well, sure, I can give you that bedpan. But my name is Dr. Scallop. I'm from the ICU. How you doing? Okay, so we're going to continue the conversation about gender. And I am on with Dr. Akuia Ampadu and Dr. Emily Shea. And we're going to pick up where we left off. So, Emily, we were talking just now about a situation. Can you start over that conversation? That would be a good way to pick up.
So, gender roles. So I have had, I think this situation is becoming less and less, at least where I am right now, is becoming less and less, I'm experiencing it less and less frequently. So earlier on in my training as a critical care fellow, there would be a lot of times where I would say, this is the plan of action that we're taking for this patient. And the nurse or whatever care provider, it would be respiratory therapy, whomever, would disagree with me out loud vehemently, even though what I'm saying makes perfect sense, and or go to the attending. And most times it was a male attending. So the attending is essentially my boss. It's the person I'm practicing and training under, and more or less everything I do is under their name. But if they weren't there, it would be me. You know, I would be the one calling the shots, and that's the purpose of the training. So in some situations, I agree with them double checking, you know, my decision. But in a lot of those situations, I eventually felt that it was because I was a woman, or am a woman, and potentially a Black woman. I felt that race was part of it in some cases. And like I said, I feel like I'm experiencing it less, and I think it's just because I've been there in that arena a little bit longer, and so they know how I operate and they trust me more. But it was something that I noticed a lot that was really frustrating to me. Like, I'm giving you the plan, and then you are coming back and talking to my attending with me standing there. He tells you the exact same thing, and now you're going to do it. Well, you could have done it 15 to 20 minutes ago when I told you the same thing he just said.
So let me ask a question. Have you observed the same dynamic happening with, let's say, your male counterparts or non-Black counterparts when they started fellowship? Did they have the same resistance from those nurses?
So I'm going to say no, because I'm in my batch, I'm the only female. I'm the only female, and I'm the only Black person. So I did ask my co-fellows. I would, you know, you develop like a camaraderie. And so you kind of, I feel like our batch is pretty close. We vent to each other a lot and we talk about stuff. So there were certain people initially that I would ask, like, hey, do you find this, this, and that? And some of them would say, yeah, sometimes. And a lot of them would say, no, I haven't. And so I said, so it's because I'm a woman or because I'm Black. And some of them be like, you know what, probably. And they're males, they're non-Black males, they're white males. So, and I guess because we're friends, they would say, you know, that's really crappy, or that's not the word that they would use, but they would say that's really crappy. And one of them actually said to me that they have other female physician friends who would wear a white coat to kind of for the authority of it. Because I don't necessarily walk around in a white coat.
So cut you off, but we talked about this the last time we talked. I said that I don't wear a white coat. A lot of crit cares don't wear white coats. We're getting gritty. We're doing some, you know, procedures. It's not a great thing for us to have on. I personally think it's a fomite, as I said before.
And it is a fomite.
And I don't like it. But I see why women physicians wear the white coat a lot, because it gives a sense, you know, this is authority. And you know, it's sad that we have to use that tool to get, you know, the respect that we have earned, you know, through our education, through this career. I mean, I have, we talked about this, the badge is huge. My badge has a big physician on it, like you know, a huge MD. You can't miss it. But for some reason, you know, it's just, it doesn't connect. It doesn't connect. And I totally understand what you went through in fellowship. You know, both of you know, I told you, when I was going through fellowship, I had a lot of, you know, circumstances that I don't think I would have had if I was a white male. I'm not being racist. I'm just being observant. Okay. Yeah. I feel like if I was a male, period, I don't think I would have had those circumstances. I think that sometimes what we call assertiveness in men is perceived as aggressiveness in women.
Yeah.
And that kind of microaggression needs to go away. We have to evolve. And to me, I feel like nurses, you know, most are women. Okay. We're getting more and more male nurses now, but most of the traction that I get from nursing are women, older women too. And it's because they came up in a place where the physician didn't look like me. You understand? The physician didn't look like you. And so I think they have a problem sometimes taking authority or instruction from us.
Other women. Absolutely.
And that needs, and it goes back to what you were talking about, Akuya, about ageism. You know, we're young. We don't look, you know, and that also adds to the problem, you know. If I had, like, you know, the Toni Morrison gray locks, maybe I would get, you know, more authority. Who knows? I feel like I should not be persecuted for that, right? I was like, I have MD, you know I'm a pulmon crit. Let's go.
Yeah. Chop, chop. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I feel like sometimes I've had encounters with patients and it's the same thing. So if I realize that the patient or the family is quote unquote difficult, I'll put on the white coat before I go and talk to them, especially if it's going to be a difficult conversation, because I'm trying to impress upon them that, yes, I am the person you're going to be dealing with and I am qualified fully to deal with the situation that we are dealing with on hand. And, you know, if I walk into a room and some people will straight up ask, are you my doctor? And I'll say, yes, is that a problem? It's me. This is it. This is my tagline.
It's especially me. This is it.
At night, they ask, before, like, you say hi to them, and the first thing out of their mouth, are you the doctor? Yes, it's me. Is that a problem? This is it. I'm like, I am here to take care of you.
Wait a second. I don't get the, are you the doctor? I always get, are you the lab tech? Are you the nurse? Can you have me in your bedpan? And I go, sure, no problem, but I'm Dr. Scatlin. Hi.
I do that too. But there are some who will straight up be like, are you the doctor? Yes, it's me. Is that going to be a problem? And I say it straight like that, like deadpan, no smiling, because I'm sorry, but I come with you with respect. And instead of responding with hello, or I say to you, know, hi, how are you doing? Instead of responding, you know, I'm not feeling too good, which in my opinion is an appropriate response. Mm-hmm. Your first thing is to be aggressive toward, like, well, listen, are you the doctor?
Listen, this is what I want to remind you. Sick people don't have a filter. When people are sick and they're not feeling well, all of that nice social niceties fall away and you see who they really are.
Unfortunately, some people here, but there are some people who are just jerks, and there are some people who are still nice people. They will say, you know, yeah, I'm fine, and then go into their dry chat. But if the first thing is, are you the doctor? I can see this is going to be a problem. We're going to establish right now that, yes, I am the doctor. I am your doctor. I am the ICU doctor. Okay. And I am going to go on taking care of you. So tell me what's bothering you and let's get this going. We're clearly not here for niceties, because I came with you with respect and you didn't approach me with the same respect. And guess what? Your life is in my hands. So yes, I am the doctor. I am your doctor. Tell me what's bothering you.
Why are you mad, son?
I was about to say.
Emily is actually a very nice person. I just want you all
to know. I just want to, you know, it's more of a check and be checked system here, it seems like. Okay, so let's move on to this. What I noticed being a fellow, and I mean, even as a resident, I don't know if you guys have these experiences, but there would be times that I would be interacting with my attending and I'd be either explaining something or whatever, not even my attending, even a patient or a nurse or whatever. And then here comes my male peer saying the same thing I just said. And for some reason, it registers from them and it doesn't register from me. The mansplain. Have you had that experience?
And it's the same thing.
Definitely a few times. Unfortunately, there are even times when they'll listen to the male nurse before they'll listen to you, the female physician. Mm-hmm. You know, it's unfortunate. You would think now, being in 2020, that we're so progressive and things of that nature. But, you know, we're not. A lot of our patients are older, elderly. They come from a time where they expected the physician to be an old white man. Mm-hmm. So here you come as a young Black woman, and they don't know what to do with themselves.
There are some that just open up and say, you know, I don't want you to be my doctor. I've had that happen a couple of times, actually. You know, working in the South, you interact with a few of them that don't know that we're free yet. Anyhow, so, you know, I mean, like, I'm just going to say it like that. I thought it was, first time it happened, I was like, oh my God, I felt so offended and whatever. And then the second or third time, it just kind of washed over me. And I was like, well, would you like another physician? Well, I'm so sorry. I'm the only ICU doctor tonight, but I'm going to take care of you as best as I can. They will shout expletives and say all kind, call me out of my name. And I just smile and walk away. And
I don't apologize. They're not apologizing for asking if it's me, if I'm the doctor. They're not apologizing for that. So why should I apologize for being the doctor? No, I am your doctor.
I'm not apologizing for it. I'm not going to allow it to affect how I treat them, number one, or how I react to them. I'm not going to engage. I want them to learn by example that, yes.
I'm still going to treat you appropriately. But guess what? I'm your doctor.
Of course you are.
I'm all you've got. So we going to do this or not?
And I also think that also shows how much we respect our profession, because some other people, if they had to deal with half of the stuff that we have to deal with regarding sexism, they would blow their top off. But yeah, you deal with it, you still smile, or you don't come for them, you don't disrespect the patient. Like you said, hey, I'm still your doctor, and you have to still provide them with appropriate care. That's why we took the Hippocratic Oath. Exactly. That's why we said do no harm and all that. Even though inside you may be feeling a different way, you still have to not be biased.
Right.
Even be biased towards you and give them appropriate care.
Listen, we're human when we have feelings too. And, you know, this stuff, it's kind of like what Dr. McKenzie said on the last one. You know, it's not like we're coming to work and then we just leave whatever happened at work. We're taking care of people. We're invested in our patients, and we bring that home with us. So it has an impact on us, yes. But we've learned to adapt. But we're hoping that as things go forward, people begin to, you know, treat us better, you know?
Yeah.
There are more.
Or treat the next person, next female physician who comes along better.
There's more and more female medical graduates coming out every year. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like the shape of a woman in a white coat, guess what? You're about to get real used to it. That there's a lot of us coming through.
Yeah.
There's a lot of us coming through. So, you know. I guess my last question would be kind of to wrap up, you know, the gender conversation is, how do you think, you know, we can improve the situation or positively affect the situation? Is there anything that we can do as women of color in medicine to move things forward, or is it up to others? How does this change, this construct?
Me personally, I think it's up to others. I think they're just going to have to get used to seeing more women in the front, more women who are not just nurses, nothing wrong with being a nurse, but who have other roles in the healthcare system. And that means administration, physicians, They just need to see us in more roles. And it's coming. It's already coming. About half of the enrollees in medical school are female, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So the shift is happening. And I think the patients are going to see that more. And they're just going to have to get used to it and appreciate the blessing of having a female doctor. Because I believe it was that study last year that showed patients with female doctors, a percentage of them are less likely to die, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, be happy when we walk in. Okay.
Love it. Love it. Dr. Shea, do you have anything to add?
I don't know that there's anything that we can do other than just be there. Like, take up the space. That's it. I'm already here. I've made my bones. I'm not going to back down. I'm here. I am the physician. I'm the one taking care of you. And that's how it's going to be. I don't know. That's how I've approached it. I think that's the only way that we can make a change per se. I think people are just going to have to change their mentalities. As you said, or as you both said, there are more female physicians coming down the pike. And so we're going to take over. So guess what? Get used to it.
If you don't like us, like women.
I think for women in medicine,
get used to it.
I think for women in medicine, we need to adapt the same thing that women globally are adapting in terms of the movement. We need to, as you said, take up space. We need to be seen. We need to be heard. And we need to be open about this conversation, not just amongst one another, but with our male peers, and make them understand, you know, that this is what we go through sometimes. You know, it's also the only way things are going to change is if people recognize that there's something that is there that needs to be fixed. You can't just keep turning a blind eye to it. So speak up, be heard, take up space, and, you know, continue to own who you are as a female physician and a female physician of color. And, you know, eventually they're going to have to, you know, fall in line and accept, you know, because it's a reality that's coming to pass. So,
and the male counterparts need to stand in solidarity.
Yes,
with
they
us.
Do need to, and not just, you know, not just the male counterparts, but also our sisters that are not of color need to stand in solidarity with us too. If everybody's on the same page, then that's it. You're going to have to accept it. You know, I want to thank you guys for joining me on this conversation. Thank you for listening to MD Femme. Again, our website is www.mdfemme.com. The email is mdfemme@gmail.com. Please reach out to us if you have any comments, questions, or concerns. Thank you for listening. Bye.
The Twitter is MD Femme. We're on Twitter now.
And IG. We at MD Femme thank you for tuning in to our podcast and vlog. We are real, we are honest, and we are candid about the topics that affect all of us. We hope that our dialogue will dispel myths, change culture, and rewrite the narrative. Please visit us on Instagram and Facebook and our website, mdfemme.com. If you have questions or a topic you would like us to address, please don't hesitate to reach out to us through our social media, website, and email. We listen, we care. MD Femme.